שפכי כמים כמים ליבך לא יכח פני אשר שפכי כמים כמים ליבך לא יכח פני אשר שפכי כמים כמים ליבך לא יכח פני
אלה הדברים אשר דיבר משה אל כל ישראל בעבר הירדן במדבר בערבה מול סוף בין פרן ובין תאופל ולבן וחצרוס ודיזהב. These are the words that Moshe spoke to all Israel on the other side of the Jordan concerning the wilderness, concerning the Arava, opposite the Sea of Reeds between Paran and Tophel, and Lavan and Chatzerot and Dizahav. Let's continue.
Achad Osar Yom Mechorev Derech Har Seir Ad Kadesh Barnea.
11 days from Chorev, which is Har Sinai, by way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. I'm continuing on purpose a few more psukim, and then we'll talk.
Vayehi be'arba'im shana b'ashtei asar chodesh be'echad lachodesh diber Moshe el b'nei Yisrael Kechol asher tziva Adonai oso aleihem.
It was the 40th year in the 11th month, which is Shavat, on the first of the month, Rosh Chodesh Shavat, when Moshe spoke to the children of Israel according to everything that Hashem commanded him to them.
Acharei hakoso Eis Sichon Melech Emori Asher Yoshev B'cheshbon V'yeis Og Melech HaBashan Asher Yoshev Ba'ashtaros B'edrei.
After he had smitten Sichon, king of the Amorite, who dwelled in Cheshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, who dwell in Ashtarot in Edrei.
Be'ever hayarden bi'eretz Moav ho'il Moshe be'er es ha'torah hazos le'mor.
On the other side of the Jordan in the land of Moav, Moshe began explaining this Torah, saying, and continues. Shalom. And welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Devarim, which is Shabbat Chazon. This year, the Shabbat actually of Tisha B'Av, the fast being postponed or delayed until Motzoi Shabbat and Sunday. So, recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the seventh day of Av, 5775, corresponding to July 23rd. So let's go back a step. The opening music I used last week, Shivchi Kamayim Libech. It is my personal favorite Tisha B'Av oriented song. It's so beautiful that I like to sing it around the year, but I sort of feel guilty about singing it because it is right out of the Book of Lamentations, out of Eicha. And it speaks of pouring out my heart like water before God. And then I read the beginning of Devarim. Now, Devarim is very difficult to separate from Tisha B'Av,
And we don't have to, because it's always the Shabbat right before the Tisha B'Av fast. But it also stands on its own as one of the weekly portions. Now, beginning the book of Devarim, one has to understand that the first four books of the Torah had a certain retzef, a continuity to them, which is evidenced by the vav, the conjunctive vav, that links the books. The Ela Shemot B'nai Yisrael doesn't say Ela, these are the names of the children of Israel. It says, and these are the names. And that links it to Bereshit, which, of course, it is tied to. Vayikra, you could say, and he called. And the episode really continues how Shemot left off. And Bamidbar is a Vayidaber, and God spoke. And it is a natural continuation of the book of Vayikra, even though it's a separate book. When we come to Devarim, the Torah purposely leaves out the conjunctive vav that has been linking the books till now, and it begins with the words Ela HaDevarim. Now, the main difference between the book of Devarim and the rest of the Torah is that Moshe Rabbeinu is the speaker, the main speaker in this book of Devarim. He has been referred to in the third person throughout, and God spoke to Moshe saying, and here he uses a lot of first person. So, not necessarily in those opening verses, but coming up, he speaks of himself in the first person, because he is addressing the people who are on the threshold of the land of Israel, and he is winding up his life and his career as a leader. In the 37 days from Rosh Chodesh Shavat until his death on the 7th of Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu presents the history and the Torah to the people. Now, the reason I read so many verses in the beginning is because we have what could be thought of as a little bit repetition and redundancy here, but it isn't. In the opening verse, we have a location. These are the words that Moshe spoke to the people of Israel, where? Eiver HaYarden, Bamidbar, Ba'arava, etc., etc. When? 11 days out of Chorev, meaning an 11-day journey from Chorev, Derech Har Seir, Ad Kodesh Barnea. Then the Torah specifies again when. It was in the 40th year, on the 11th month, on the first day, Diber Moshe. Moshe spoke to the children of Israel before Ela HaDevarim Asher Diber Moshe El Kol Yisrael. Difference being that he spoke to all of Israel, and then he spoke to, let's say, a subset known as B'nai Yisrael, which is less inclusive than Kol Yisrael, and gives a little bit more context, and then says, Be'ever HaYarden, Be'eretz Moav, on the east bank of the Jordan, in the territory of Moav, which we already have heard a couple of times, Ho'il Moshe, Moshe begins Be'er, to explain the Torah. Side point, although maybe it's not really a side point, we have in these opening psukim of Devarim a match to the well-known recommended method of reviewing Torah, which is called Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum, two reviews of the text and then of the explanation. And you have that paralleled here with Diber Moshe, he spoke and he spoke, and then Be'er, he explained. And you could say that that's like the Shnai Mikra of Echad Targum. The Vilna Gaon, and if I can be so brazen as to modify it a little bit neater for the way the Torah lays out the Sedras, divides the book of Devarim into three parts. The first part, I would like to suggest, is the Sedra of Devarim, Vo'et Hanan, and Ekev. In those three Sedras, there are relatively few mitzvot, but you have the basic presentation of Torah in the form of the Ten Commandments, in the form of the first and second passages of the Shema. You have a review of important historical highlights of the 40 years sojourn from Egypt until the threshold of Eretz Yisrael. And we can say that that address was the introduction of his remarks, which were geared to all of Israel, men, women, and children across the board. Then we settle into Re'eh, Shofetim, Ki Teitzeh, three sedras that contain a total of 170 mitzvot out of the 613. That's a very significant block of mitzvot. And we can say that that portion, that section of Devarim, is addressed by the second Diber Moshe, which is El Bnei Yisrael. What did he speak to them? Kechol asher tziva Hashem oto alehem, all that God commanded, tziva, mitzvah. So how many days out of the 37 was introduction? I have no idea, but they started with an introduction, which is represented by Devarim, Vo'et Hanan, and Ekev, continues to the nuts and bolts of Judaism, 170 mitzvot, plus a review of all of the mitzvot of the Torah. Then, corresponding to that Ho'il Moshe Be'er et HaTorah Hazot, that Moshe began to explain, I picture in my mind's eye Moshe telling the people, day after day they've been taking copious notes on all of the details of the mitzvot that he was reviewing with them, and he says, close your notebooks, put away your pencil, and listen. And he explains in those last sedras of Ki Tavo, Nitzavim, Vayelech, Ha'azinu, B'zot HaBracha, you have the why of Judaism. You have the concept of reward and punishment, the concept of free will, which is very much linked to reward and punishment. You have the warnings of what will happen if we don't keep the mitzvot. You have God's recommendation of living a life of Torah and living. And very few mitzvot in that section, but it fits into the Be'er et HaTorah Hazot. Okay, now let's take a slightly different angle to look at it again. We have all the way from Parshat Lech Lecha, when God tells Avraham, not yet with that name Avraham, when he was still Avram, Lech Lecha me'artzecha mi'molaretecha mi'beit avicha, leave your homeland and go to the land which I will show you. In the book of Bereishit, there is an abundance of references to the land being a gift from God to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov and their descendants, meaning us. And the book of Bereishit ends with us in exile. Shemot picks up our time in Egypt, and then the Exodus, and then Revelation at Sinai, and then into the Midbar, the wilderness, and the building of the Mishkan. And Vayikra continues, and Bamidbar continues, and we are now not just a little bit into the Midbar, but we are in a process of 40 years wandering in the Midbar. And the book of Bamidbar ends with us on, as I said before, the threshold of the land of Israel, but not there yet. In Devarim, we find repeatedly the words that teach us a significance of living a Jewish life, a Torah life in Eretz Yisrael. Until then, they have been in the cocoon or the womb of the Midbar, and Torah was their life. Their food was provided via miracle. I shouldn't say via miracle, because the book I just read on English usage says that the word via is not correct in that context, but by miracles, and water by miracles, and clothes that grew on their backs, and shoes that didn't wear out, and divine clouds of glory protecting them and leading them, and a pillar of fire at nighttime. It has been a miraculous existence, not meant to be there forever, just like the period of gestation in the womb is a specific number of months, and then the baby, who has been privileged to a miraculous supply of oxygen and nourishment and protection, has now to emerge into the world and become a living and breathing being in this less than perfect world. And that's what's going to happen when the people come into the land. And that's why the Meraglim panicked, and panicked the people. And there might have been a bunch of mixed motives there, but basically they said, who needs Eretz Yisrael? And the Torah, and here Moshe Rabbeinu, repeats over and over again the fact that we are soon to cross the Jordan and go into the land. In Devarim, Re'eh natati lifneichem et ha'aretz, God said to the people, and Moshe's repeating, see that I have given you the land, bo'u u'reshu et ha'aretz, go and possess it, asher nishba Hashem lavoteichem li'avraham li'itzak u'li'akov, latet lahem u'lizaram acharehem. Go into that land which God has promised your ancestors to give to them and to you. Over and over again. Hashem Elokechem hirba etchem v'hinechem hayom kechochavei hashamayim larov. Moshe tells the people that you have grown into a very substantial sized nation. And I, says Moshe, can't really handle it anymore. Echa esalavadi torchachem umasachem v'ribachem. He, Moshe, says to the people, how can I alone carry your contentiousness, your burdens, and your quarrels? And that led to the establishment of a Sanhedrin of 70 to elders and rulers and leaders to rule the people. And it's a combination of a blessing and an admission that it's too much for one person. Hashem Elokei Avoteichem Yosef Aleichem Kachem Elef Pamim Vivarechetchem Kasher Diber Lachem. That's the Pasuk, add to you 1,000 times yourselves, and may God bless you as he has spoken of you. And the Eicha here, and the Eicha in the Haftorah, and the Eicha in Eicha ties the Parsha of Devarim and its Haftorah to the people, to Tisha B'Av, to the Book of Lamentations, and what Moshe is about to speak to the people. Before I continue, let me play the track of Shivchi Kamayim again. I hope you like it, because you heard it last week and you're going to hear it again now. And that'll finish up the first half of the show, and we will talk a lot more in the second half. That's why I wanted to make sure we get the music in now. Shivchi kamayim kamayim libech noyechach b'nei Hashem. Shivchi kamayim You are listening to Torah Tibbetz Audio for Parshat Devarim and for Shabbat Chazon, pre-Tisha B'Av. I just lost a very significant chunk of the recording of this second half, and I don't know if I'm going to have time to go through the full 23-minute half, but let's do the best we can. Until now, I was sort of presenting Devarim unattached to Tisha B'Av, but it is very, very much attached. Because the Mishnah in Ta'anit tells us that five calamities occurred to our ancestors on the 17th of Tammuz and five on Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av, the first of the list is the decree against the adult male population. That means the men who were 20 years and older when they left Egypt, to die out in the course of the wandering of 40 years, when the original plan was a much, much, much shorter sojourn through the Midbar right into Eretz Yisrael. And that means we're talking about the sin of the spies, Chet HaMeraglim. Now, the other four items on the list are all very much tied into to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the destruction of the first temple, the destruction of the second temple, the destruction of the city of Beitar, which was a small, powerful enclave and stronghold of Jewish resistance after the destruction, which was also wiped out on Tisha B'Av, and then the plowing over of the city, or of Har HaBayit, as a symbol and a fulfillment of the prophecy of destruction, and then many other events that we've attached subsequently, the expulsion from Spain and various parts of the Holocaust and other events that make the day of Tisha B'Av justifiably the black day that it is in the Jewish calendar. And on the face of it, one might not think in terms of Chet HaMeraglim being directly related to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, but it really is. Because Chet HaMeraglim basically allowed the Jewish people to break apart the package deal that we were supposed to live up to. God took us out of Egypt. I've said this many, many times. Before he took us out, he appeared to Moshe at the burning bush. He said to Moshe at the bush, I heard their cries, and I remember my promises, and I am going down into that land of Egypt to take the people out and bring them to a land flowing with milk and honey, Eretz Yisrael. That was the package. On the way, we were to receive the Torah at Sinai, and there was never a notion of anything separating Torah and its intended venue, Eretz Yisrael. We are responsible for ripping the deal apart and saying, in essence, sometimes we'll take the Torah part, but this Eretz Yisrael you can have. That's what the Meraglim said. We have everything we need in the Midbar. We have protection of heavenly clouds of glory, directions by fire by night and cloud by day, miraculous food, miraculous water, clothes that grow on our back, shoes that never wear out, the greatest Torah teacher of all time, Moshe Rabbeinu, from Sinai, and what do we need more than that? Well, what you need more than that is the intended venue of Jewish life, which is the land of Israel. The Midbar was supposed to be like gestation, like development in a womb, where food is miraculously provided, and water and blood and whatever the baby needs, protection in the womb. But it's supposed to emerge into Avir HaOlam, this world, and function as a living and breathing human being in a less than perfect environment, which the person and people in general have the ability to take into their hands to improve and control to the best of their ability and provide a very, very nice life. That's what was supposed to happen to the people of Israel. So the separating of Eretz Yisrael from Torah is something that weakened the hold of the people on the land, which resulted in, for various other reasons, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and exile, and again the second time around for a much longer exile, because Jews have bought the line of the Meraglim to be able to say, even today, we have everything we need for a complete Jewish life here in Borough Park, Muncie, Five Towns, Teaneck, New Jersey, Golders Green, and a whole bunch of other places. The answer is that that's not what God intended. And it's not what he wanted for the people. That's what the people ended up doing because they sinned and were expelled from the land. There might have been different kind of punishments for sin, not exile from the land, if we would have maintained that firm, unbreakable connection between Torah and Eretz Yisrael. So when the Ramban explains why in Parshat Ekev, where we get the second passage of the Shema from, why it says there to learn Torah and put on tefillin and put mezuzah on your doorpost, when one sedra earlier in Vo'et Chanan, where the first passage of Shema comes from, it already said to learn Torah and to put on tefillin and to put mezuzah on your doorpost. And the Ramban explains that it's repeating it after saying, if you don't listen to God and you sin and you turn away from him to other gods, then you will lose your hold on the land. So then the Torah has to come and say, yes, but even in exile, you have to keep mitzvot. But the Ramban says, why, based on the Midrash, in order to keep in shape in the performance of mitzvot, so that when you return to the land of Israel, they shouldn't be strange and foreign things, you should be comfortable with them. But to realize this downsizing of the significance of doing mitzvot outside of Israel, where you're not in the proper venue for mitzvot, you have to keep them, Ramban says, to stay in shape. That's a big, big difference from coming to live in Israel and performing mitzvot here. And there's still plenty to go here, which we're not going to get into. But that's not the point. The point is, there couldn't have been an exile like we are still in today had it not been from the original Chet HaMeraglim, which said, God says we should observe Torah and live a life in Eretz Yisrael, but who needs it? And that sort of laid the foundation for the other tragedies and calamities associated with Tisha B'Av. Now this year we have not an unusual but recurring situation where the 9th of Av is Shabbat, and because we're not allowed to fast on Shabbat, the rule is that Tisha B'Av fast gets bumped to Saturday night, Sunday. There's an interesting dispute as to whether Sunday's fast is a makeup for the one that we should have had on Shabbat but can't, or has Tisha B'Av been moved lock, stock, and barrel to Sunday, and Sunday becomes the day this year that is Tisha B'Av, even though it's not the 9th of Av, it's the 10th. Now, the difference shows up in a few different ways. But one interesting way is a boy who becomes 13 this Sunday, or a girl who becomes 12 this Sunday. Are they obligated to fast on Sunday? If we say that Tisha B'Av, lock, stock, and barrel, was moved to Sunday, and they reach their age of mitzvot on Sunday, then they have to fast. But if we say that Sunday's fasting is a makeup for Shabbat, and on Shabbat they had not yet reached the age of mitzvot, even though they were only one day shy, then they would not have to fast on Sunday. Is the day weakened in its severity because it is bumped, or does it still maintain the full measure? To a great extent, it's a full fast day, especially since there was an opinion that we should fast on the 10th and not necessarily on the 9th, because the Beit HaMikdash essentially burned on the 10th. It started burning on the 9th, but continued to burn through the 10th. So the rules and regulations of Tisha B'Av are in full force, but the leniencies in cases of pregnant women, nursing women, people with minor health situations. I say minor because if it's a major thing, then they wouldn't probably be fasting in the first place. But a minor situation, It's a little bit more relaxed because this year it's not on the 9th of Av, it's on the 10th. Let me talk a little bit about Shabbat. Shabbat is Tisha B'Av, but it's Shabbat. And therefore, Shabbat wins. There's no public display of mourning permitted on Shabbat. And therefore, meals can be as sumptuous as you want, even Sudah Shlishit. There is no egg and pita for a Sudah HaMafseket. There is whatever you eat in Sudah Shlishit, or whatever even you want to add to it, according to many people. And yet, we have to finish a couple of minutes before sunset, even though we still hold Shabbat until stars out. So there is a little bit of encroaching on Shabbat, but not in an obvious manifest way. Since you don't go around eating all the time, then you're not eating for that last 35, 40, 45 minutes of Shabbat. There's not going to be manifest that it is a an act of fasting. You don't discuss it like that. You just don't eat then. And there are little questions about some of the other things, too. I find fascinating the different opinions about even the tunes that are used in davening. There is an old custom. Many Ashkenazi shuls do it. I don't know about Sfardim. To sing L'chododi to the tune of Eleitzion from Tisha B'Av morning. L'chododi likrat kala p'nei Shabbat nekabila L'chododi likrat Shabbat p'nei Shabbat nekabila. Fluffed it there a little, but you get the idea. Some do that, and others say, how could you do that? That's a Tisha B'Av song, and it doesn't belong on Shabbat. And there are a whole bunch of other examples like that, too. So it's a strange kind of Shabbat. In Israel, the minhag is to bathe the same way you would do any Friday for Shabbat, a nice warm shower, shampooing of the hair, and whatever you ordinarily would do for Shabbat, you do for this Shabbat as well. And others take a stricter view and say that you have to reduce the temperature of the water to at least room temperature, making it less comfortable and luxurious, and wash only parts of the body, but however your minhag. There are a lot of different opinions about different aspects, which we can't go and do justice to in the context of this show, because there are so many on the one hand, on the other hand, and you really need to be advised by your LOR, local Orthodox rabbi, or whoever gives you your religious advice. Most important, especially since we can't go over all of the details now, most important is a statement which I think bears repeating. It's mentioned in the Gemara a couple of times. Kol hamit'abel al Yerushalayim, all who mourn for Jerusalem, zoche v'roe b'simchata, will be privileged to see its joy. I would like to see the joy of rebuilt Jerusalem, and if the dues that one pays for that is taking a serious attitude about the 3 weeks and the 9 days and the week in which Tisha B'Av falls and Tisha B'Av itself, then that's something that we should do, because it makes a statement that we believe that the Geula has not come yet. We believe and hope and pray for the restoration of the Beit HaMikdash. And even though there are wonderful, wonderful aspects of life in Israel to celebrate, there are other times of the years which we do, now one has to mourn what's still missing. And one has to resolve to become a better person, interpersonal relationship as well as between man and God, and to help in a pleasant way others to also improve to the point where God will go through a checklist, so to speak, and say, idol worship? Nope, they don't do that anymore. Check. And this sin? no problem. Check, check, check. Gratuitous hatred among each other? Nope. They're very tolerant society. Check. And they love each other? Check, check. And they feel unified? Check, check. Halavai, we should get all of these checks. And then, when God looks at the total picture, he'll say, no more reason to delay the Messianic era. And the next step is the Geula.
Jerusalem, oh.
would just like to end by wishing you all a Shabbat Shalom, a meaningful Tisha B'Av, and let's hope that this is the last sad fasting Tisha B'Av for Am Yisrael, L'Geula Shlema, L'Hishtameah.